Welcome to the Small Caps Podcast, where we discuss news and information related to ASX-listed companies and financial markets, keeping investors informed. Note that the content in this podcast is not financial or investment advice, and be sure to head over to smallcaps.com.au to get the latest market news. Now, without further delay, here's today's podcast.
Welcome to Small Caps and our special coverage of the coming energy crisis in Australia. Whether you like it or not, there is going to be in the future the potential, especially on the East Coast, for some energy supply issues. I'm your host, Kerry Stevenson, and joining me today are three people a lot smarter than me in this sector. First up, we have Rob Towner, Managing Director of Triangle Energy. Rob has had over 25 years' experience in the corporate advisory markets. He was appointed Managing Director of Triangle Energy in 2015, and they have become the majority owner and operator of the Cliff Head oil field and the Arrowsmith Stabilisation Project, both over in WA. Also joining me today is Neil Gibbons, Managing Director of Vintage Energy. Neil's got a lot of experience in technical and leadership in the petroleum industry. He's been involved in a lot of successful exploration, development, and corporate acquisition projects. With Vintage Energy, they are doing a lot of work with reviewing oil and gas opportunities in the Australian market. And he'll tell us a lot more about what they're doing in the next few minutes. And finally, last but certainly not least, Mr. John Phillips. John Phillips is the Managing Director of Blue Energy. It's a rapidly evolving oil and gas exploration company with abundant assets, both conventional and unconventional, I love that, in Queensland and the Northern Territory. And they are looking to meet the rising demand for a cleaner energy future. And John himself, he's a petroleum geologist, and he's had more years than me in the oil and gas industry. And he has been in conventional oil and gas, as well as coal seam gas experience. So welcome, gentlemen, to our special edition and coverage. First up, let's just as an overview, there's a clear gas supply shortage over here in the eastern states. And Rob, you're over in the west. Neil, you're in South Australia. And John, you're up here in Queensland. No one from New South Wales. They're all very quiet at the moment. But crude oil prices have rebounded and stabilized since their lows in 2015-16. We've got reduced operating costs, as far as I understand. So that could look at improved margins for both oil and gas production here in Australia. I want to discuss the good, the bad, and the ugly about our potential energy supply shortage, but more importantly as well, the security of that energy supply here in Australia. Because the reason I wanted to talk to all three of you is to understand what that means for Australia, that security need. I think we need to discuss it, and people need to understand some of the issues that are facing us, because we don't necessarily want to rely on our neighbours for oil and gas for our future energy needs. So, Rob, if I can throw over to you just to talk about what's happening in the industry as you see it. Do we have a looming energy supply shortage? Or is everything rosy and we don't have anything to worry about?
Look, I mean, obviously with Cliff Head, we're producing conventional oil, and from a West Australian perspective, but it does potentially longer term reach out to the country. We don't have a refinery here anymore. So we are now reliant on 100% imported refined fuels, which is currently going into Kwinana. Get to the point, which is very much in the press and the federal government's view on energy security, particularly with refined fuels. And I just see that there's a very large mismatch between way where we have companies committed to expenditure in the country to find hydrocarbons, and we have no capacity to do anything with them, particularly in WA. Our production at Cliff Head now is costing me $16 a barrel to send to Southeast Asia to get a sale. That's the question and the problem. And I think more on a macro basis of investment, the opportunity to invest in exploration and development for hydrocarbon in this country is very, very large. Yet for 20 years now, we've seen the diversion of investment from governments, state and national, going to renewables, and it's provided a massive gap of funding for energy that we have in this country. And that needs to be addressed and brought closer together. I'm not against renewables. It's going to happen. But in between time, there's a real gap, which is the problem.
John, do you agree with that where there's a gap that none of us, by the way, have got an issue with renewables, but there is that gap, there's a looming gap, and do you think that there needs to be more investment put into what we have here in Australia in the terms of oil and gas production?
Absolutely, and I'm speaking, I guess, from a position of some bias because I'm in the industry and have been for a while, and I think it's a good industry. I think addressing your point about national security, I think one of the issues has been over the last 20, 25 years, maybe longer, the lack of a vision for an energy vision for the country, really, East and West Coast. And as you rightly said, Rob, the decline in the refining sector is reflecting that. Not only that, I think the fact that we are beholden to the rest of the world to supply us with refined product, namely diesel, which underpins our mining fleets, our transportation fleets for food, et cetera. Yep. We've only maybe 3 weeks of supply of diesel for our fleets. We've got less avgas. We've probably got 7 to 10 days of avgas, which runs our emergency services fleet of choppers, et cetera. So I think, and on top of that, our refining capacity is gone through the floor. Largely, I guess, through lack of investment, the margins have not been all that good. And the other thing I think we don't tend to concentrate on much is the ownership of those refineries. We are playing on a world stage where the multinationals have every opportunity to go and maximise their margins elsewhere with different product and different cracking capacities and streams. So I think to bring it together into a vision for energy in this country, we need to do that again and have some vision for how we want this to look. The other thing I'd say is, yes, renewables are a fact of life. Everyone's going for this 50% renewable target, which leaves 50% of the other energy's got to come from somewhere else. Yeah. And the nature of renewable energy, it is intermittent, it is unreliable, and it causes grief on the grid with frequency and inertia. So we being in the gas business primarily for exploration purposes and development, we obviously believe that gas is the principal firming fuel for the big blowout in renewable energy, namely wind and solar. And batteries are fine, but you need something to charge them up with. So I think there needs to be a good, hard discussion about the energy future for this country, because we're probably one of the only OECD countries that only has a few tools in the shed in terms of delivering energy to the population. We don't have nuclear. We don't have an extension cord for many of our neighbours. And we seem to be rapidly converging on a binary outcome of either all renewables and no fossil fuel, which is untenable.
John, you mentioned before that we need a vision for the future energy needs of Australia. Why isn't it happening? Why do you think that we can't have that vision already in place? What's gone wrong?
I think there's many factors, some of which are out of our control in terms of international pricing of fuel. The other thing I didn't mention was our lack of capacity to store hydrocarbons that we produce ourselves or import. So we're between a rock and a hard place with no storage and no vision of how we're actually going to get the storage filled if we do have it. That's slowly changing, I think. It's a mindset that's been brought about by, I guess, COVID to an extent and the supply chain issues and being held to ransom by other countries in that supply chain, but also the price of electricity. I think that has brought into sharp focus what it costs us to heat and light our homes and cook and keep industry ticking over.
For the investors that are listening to this right now, those higher energy costs are a direct result of what, John?
Marginal cost of generating electricity, which has been borne by gas, I suspect, in large part, but it's also the network costs of plugging in all the renewables that they don't have to bear, by the way. So, and the subsidies, presumably, that are provided to the renewable sector. We're always, I guess, criticised for receiving subsidies in the oil and gas business. I'm yet to see a valid breakdown of those subsidies. But it pales into insignificance compared to what's been doled out to the renewable energy sector. And I don't have a problem with renewable energy. It's just not a level playing field.
It's not a level playing field, exactly. Thanks, John. I will come back to you on a couple of points there. Neil Gibbons from Vintage Energy. What are your views on where we're sitting at the moment in Australia? Do we have a looming energy supply shortage? It looks like we do, but people aren't necessarily talking about it. It seems to be brushed under the carpet a little bit.
Yeah, look, I agree. And in fact, John, I agree with a lot of what you said. I think the issue we've got in the country at the moment is we just don't talk about these things holistically. We just don't look at how, you know, here we are now, where do we want to be? Okay, we've got an idea where we want to be, but no one's putting in place or talking about the mechanisms we're going to use to get there. We get a lot of backing one sort of group. We might say, well, we back renewables, or we back wind, or we back solar. We hate oil and gas, or we hate coal. Well, you know, they're all part of the mix, and they're all going to have to be part of the mix going forward. And we should be talking about how we do a transition from where we are now to where we want to be. And I think there's a definite lack of that. There's a definite lack of leadership at the government level on those sorts of things. And it's very hard when you have activists as well just talking about one aspect rather than the whole aspect of supplying energy to Australia or energy to the world. I mean, I think using the US as an example, shale gas over in the US, the impact it's had in emissions reduction by switching coal to gas, it's been massive. They've managed to reduce their emissions because of that. But we don't talk about that here.
Why not, Neil? Why don't we talk about it?
I think there's a lot of sort of in politics in Australia, I think they like to seem to be backing winners or backing, you know, the populist view. And I think they should be leading rather than just backing sort of various groups. And that's my view. I think a bit more leadership in this space would be an excellent thing.
I think also that there needs, and that's why I was really keen to talk to all three of you. I think for the general investor, general man on the street out there, that understanding that if we go fully down that renewable energy route, then it's not sustainable in its current form. You have to have, as you just said, Neil, it has to be that holistic approach. We've got to look at, you know, from coal to wind to solar to oil to gas, all sorts of energy, because it's the energy mix, isn't it?
And if you look at those countries in the world that don't have any indigenous energy sources, like the Japans, like the Koreans, like the Taiwans, they have a portfolio approach to their energy generation needs. And they have, for instance, Japan used to have a philosophy where 25% would come from oil, 25% from gas, 25% from coal, and the rest from nuclear. And then they'd go and source those particular components from different suppliers. In Australia, we haven't tended to look at our energy mix at all critically.
Right. And is that the key issue then, John? It's the energy mix and how it all works together? And is it because we've siloed each of the different energy areas? Is that what you're saying?
I think it's a component of it, a significant component of it. We've been fat, dumb and happy here, having just burning coal till the cows come home, which has served us very well. And it's got us down to some of the cheapest electricity we've known in generations, and now that's being reversed, I guess, by penalising fossil fuels in terms of the way they generate and the way they're marketed. So having a sensible mix of energy sources in the national portfolio, I think, has been lacking. And then arbitrary figures like 50% of renewables, I'm not sure that the grid can handle that. As you've seen with South Australia, having that amount of intermittent, unreliable wind and solar absolutely demands gas-fired backup. I think South Australia was running at 93% gas some of last week because there was no wind and it was overcast. So they're the practicalities that the average guy on the street or lady in the street does not see.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just not spoken about, is it? It's just, it's kind of, well, we're just going renewable. People talk about renewable, but they do not talk about how it all works as a mix, as you say, as a reliable energy mix. Rob, what's WA doing in that respect in terms of, you talked about refining. Rob, can you hear me? Yeah.
Yep.
You spoke about the fact that you have to send your oil overseas to be refined, to be brought back into Australia. Did I hear you right when you said that? Am I?
Look,
it sounds so illogical.
Look, first of all, again, the production that comes out of the Midwest region or the Perth Basin that used to go to Kwinana, it's not a lot. It's a couple of thousand barrels a day at the moment. That's a result of a lack of investment, probably particularly in the Perth Basin, looking for conventional oil now. Lack of investment for 15 years. That's changed somewhat on the gas side more recently, where there's been investment and there's been good gas discoveries. It's really, this is where it's so far apart. And I understand the BP refinery was doing 100,000 barrels a day importing crude. But again, there's been a lack of planning on the basis of, okay, well, we've still got in the country, not alone just Western Australia, people committed to going and finding more oil. There's an oil well being drilled at the second half of this year. What's going to happen if there's a discovery? I mean, it could be significant. So, you know, we're now, as a result, having to look at the situation of building.
We've lost you, Rob.
You there?
Yep.
There's opportunity for the country to do this. I mean, it's sort of while I was listening then, I mean, I guess in simple ways that I look at it, you know, if someone was to give, no, the government provides trillions of dollars over the last 20 years towards renewables development. It's not even necessarily going 100% to building it. The petroleum and gas industry from an exploration point of view is effectively given zero. And it's very difficult in this environment now with the misaligned understanding by the population of the energy needs to get investment money to do what we've been, you know, committed to do. So again, on that sort of, I'm moving away from the refining side, it's even worse on the bottom end. You know, the ASX, for example, now has, I think it's 91 companies listed in this energy sector. It used to be 164 about 2 years ago, because the investment community is just not willing to do it. So it's really, that's where the real crunch comes from my perspective, is that there's not only lack of investment in refining, it's lack of investment available to go and find the stuff. And it's a long-term thing that's been slowly wound down.
And no one's talking about it.
Nope. And no one really wants to listen or hasn't wanted to.
Just coming to your point, Rob, about refining and having to send it overseas, you know, we have a long and colourful history of not adding value to products here.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Whether it be, and this is the vision side of it, whether it be iron ore shipping it over to Japan and China and importing it back as finished goods, or whether it's gas and oil, we don't have a thriving plastics industry here, which is the highest value add to a molecule of gas or oil you can have. Quite happy to turn it into fertilizer, which is the lowest value add, and compete against subsidized products coming in from Indonesia or India. So I think the mindset is we are still a big hole we dig stuff out of.
Yes.
It hasn't changed and it needs to change. And I think what, to me, the turning point has been manufacturers are going to the wall on the East Coast because of the supply and the price of energy, right? Whether it be electrons or whether it be gas. I think it's been a bit of a clarion call when you're seeing, you know, mum and dad companies, plastic companies going to the wall because they can't get long-term supply. Now, there's a little bit of an own goal in some of that from some of our gas users. I mean, and I'm talking specifically on the East Coast and West Coast, Rob, you've got a different set of rules over there. But we had an emerging LNG industry in Gladstone that was 10 years in the making, and the gas users had every opportunity to go long gas with contracts that were at reasonable prices 10 years ago. They chose not to do it. And guess what's happened? You know, here we are 10, 15 years later, and everyone's squealing because they can't get reasonable quantities of gas at the right price.
So what's the answer, John? Because we're running out of time. What I want from each of you...
As the ACCC, as Rod Sims said 5 years ago, 6 years ago, more new gas supply needs to come into the market to push down prices. There needs to be better infrastructure and tolling in that infrastructure to encourage people to go look for oil and gas. And I think in that vein, the COVID crisis and the federal government's commission on the recovery, which is a gas web recovery, is slowly but surely pointing in the right direction to open up new gas supply basins. That's going to take time, it's going to take commitment, and it's going to take underwriting from government in terms of putting that infrastructure in for domestic contracts.
Gary, I think it's pretty simple supply and demand economics. You know, if we're encouraged to go out and find more gas, and certainly, you know, if you can do that at the moment, you can make some good money for your investors. But if you go out and encouraged to find supply of gas, pricing will come down, the supply crisis will ease. It's pretty simple stuff. And let's not make it too complicated.
I like that, Neil, but should there be a better balance of government investment into renewables versus the oil and gas sector, or is that a vote too far for the government at the moment?
It might be a vote too far for the government, but I tend to like seeing markets work on their own. The problem we've got at the moment, I suppose, that Rob talked about is getting investors involved in the industry. It has been harder over the last couple of years. But in terms of offering opportunity to investors, I think if we find gas at the moment, particularly on the East Coast, we can sell it at a good price and certainly make it a good thing for our investors. So I think, you know, let's not put impediments in the way would be a good start. There are still places around Australia where, you know, there are bans on going in certain areas of the state. Northern Territory is one where we've got a permit and we can't explore at the moment. Victoria has been very slow in getting away from their moratorium on onshore gas exploration. They've lifted the moratorium, but we still don't have the regulations in place, so we don't know how it's all going to work. We need to see those impediments disappear as a first port of call.
Well, and I think part of that will be the general public understanding that, you know, with an energy supply shortage comes an increase in prices, ladies and gentlemen, hit your bottom line, you know. So we need to have a better energy supply. And as you say, no impediments, we need to some support rather than the impediments going forward. Rob, if I can throw to you for last comment, we are running out of time. What do you think I guess, what's the solution?
As a result of, you know, what we've experienced with the refinery here, I have now almost for 12 months, I'm having regular meetings with the regulators and advisors to the various resources or energy ministers. It's a softly, softly approach, but I must admit that the attention to what we like to bring to them is becoming a lot more, a lot better received. And I think, unfortunately, that is the process that we have to slowly, slowly actually provide the advisors to the ministers with the position. There's no other way they're going to actually find out. And so I think whilst we do have industry bodies, I've taken upon myself that perhaps a few of us need to join up and actually create our own, particularly at the smaller market end of the ASX listed companies, make our own path to these advisors to provide them with what is actually happening, not what they want to dream about.
It's a very good comment. Maybe the three of you can get together and start it all. This has been a very robust discussion today. It's certainly something that I do want people to understand. But to your point, Neil, now is actually quite a good time for investors to get involved in the oil and gas, the energy sector. So I'm going to give each of you 30 seconds to tell our investor audience out there what you do and why now is a good time to invest. Over to you, John, first. Then I'll go to you, Neil, and we'll finish off with Rob. John, why is now a good time to invest in blue energy?
Because we have 4,000 petajoules sitting on the East Coast market that just needs a 400-kilometre pipeline to connect the North Bowen Basin to start with into the East Coast market. And we've cut deals with long-term quantity deals with Energy Australia, Origin Energy, and a local nickel refiner up in Townsville. So we just need the infrastructure to be put in place, and we're off to the races.
Just a little bit of infrastructure and you're away. That's blue energy. So, and your ASX code, John?
BLU.
BLU, nice and simple. Neil Gibbons from Vintage Energy. Why is now a good time for investors to have a look at what you're doing?
Well, we've just made two gas discoveries in the Cooper Basin. We're pretty close to infrastructure there, so we can get our gas to market. We're looking to get gas online this financial year. So I think now is a good time to get into Vintage. Just because of that, I think it puts us in a good position.
And your ASX code for our listeners out there?
VEN, VEN.
Vending in. Yeah. Rob Towner, Triangle Energy. Why is now a good time for investors to have a look at Triangle?
We've got production of approximately 700 barrels a day at the moment. We've got infrastructure. We've got capacity to actually handle 15,000 barrels of oil a day. We have recently raised $10 million. We have an investment in State Gas, another listed company that's worth approximately $20 million, and we're market cap's 14. Way out of whack, really cheap. And we have development wells planned to be drilled in 2023 to extend the life of the field to 2030. And have recently now got to a point where we have 10,000 square kilometres of permits in the offshore and onshore Perth Basin, which is in total highly unexplored, and have started the process of looking at having joint venture partners to start working on those projects.
And your ASX code for our listeners?
TEG.
There you have it.
Peg, well, rhymes with peg.
So there you heard it from the horse's mouth, ladies and gentlemen. You know, there is an energy supply shortage, but it's a very, very good time to be looking at some of our oil and gas providers over here in Australia, because I know that some of you are living all around the world. So those ASX code again, BLU, Blue Energy, VEN for Vintage, and TEG for Triangle Energy. To John, to Neil, and to Rob, thank you very much for joining us on this Small Caps special edition on the looming energy supply shortage here in Australia.
Kerry. Thank you, Kerry.
Thanks, Kerry. That was really good.